The Mariners make moves.
I want to trade with the Baltimore Orioles.
Bolstering the rotation.
Giovanni Gallardo.
Adding speed.
Dyson out at first base. There he goes. Pitch on the way. Inside a ball. It's safe at second is Dyson.
Upgrading the outfield.
Caught with a diving catch by Dyson.
What's next for the Mariners? Time to talk some baseball. This is The Hot Stove on 710 ESPN Seattle. 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Happy New Year, everybody. Welcome to Hot Stove Baseball for 2017, our first edition of a brand new season. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Riz, along with Shannon Dreher, Aaron Goldsmith, producer-engineer Kevin Kremen, and Matty Harden in the control room. And we've got a lot to talk about on our first Hot Stove of the year. A lot going on, of course, with this baseball team. Jerry DePoto, we're going to have Jerry on for the first hour, 2 hours of talking Mariners baseball tonight. And then in the second hour, we're going to visit with, from the Seattle Times, Larry Stone, talking about the moves that Jerry has made, the way this ball club is coming together, and also Edgar Martinez gaining more and more momentum to try to get into the Hall of Fame. But guys, Shannon Dreher, Mr. Goldsmith, Happy New Year. Shannon, I'll tell you what, I'm excited about a brand new season. Happy New Year, sweetie.
Happy New Year to you too, sweetheart. That's new, like
Welcome
it.
To a good year.
Hey, honey bunch over there. How you doing?
Hi, Aaron. Happy New Year to you too, buddy.
Thanks, yeah, man.
Everybody have great holidays, Christmas. And
they're great. Good to be talking some baseball again.
Jerry, the two moves recently, Giovanni Gallardo.
Two?
Yeah, recently.
Okay.
I said recently. You know, coming over from the Orioles and that trade for Seth Smith. And also, I really like this one, too. Jerrod Dyson, the speedster, coming over from the Kansas City Royals and that trade for Nathan Kearns. And Shannon and Aaron, this is something that really gives the ball club a new dynamic of running the bases, stealing bases. The tremendous speed that Dyson brings along with Leonis Martin and also Gene Segura, who stole, 33 bases. This is going to be a fun team to watch.
Those three combined last year to steal 30 more bases than the entire Mariners team did.
Yeah.
So it's a different aspect. It's an aspect that they wanted to have last year. We saw them work on it in spring training, and it's one of the things that Scott Servais admitted at the end of the year. Okay, we've got to go back to the drawing board on that. They want that to be a part of the team. The athleticism is something that DePoto has wanted, you know, since he's been here. It's tough to accomplish it all in 1 year, but you got to like what you see on paper in that aspect.
And, Aaron, we're talking about Jerry DePoto has made, 34 trades involving, 85 players since he took over the reins in September of 2015. This guy has been busier than any GM in baseball. A distant second is the new GM in Atlanta.
Well, he's not lazy, is he, Jerry?
No.
That is. No, he's. You're right. He's very active. And I think getting back to the Dyson deal, it's so funny how when Jerry took over, he and we'll be able to talk to him about this coming up in the next segment, Jerry very clearly put out his blueprint for the Mariners going forward, and we know that it can take more than just a season and off season to get a blueprint together. And the Mariners were that slugging, home run hitting team last season that – the Mariners were kind of trying to get away from, and it just kind of happened. And so now you can see with a little bit more time and a little more creativity, like Jerry hasn't lacked that already.
Yeah,
he's bringing in more and more pieces that are going to have an outfield now with five pieces that you really – maybe it's not fair for us to say we'd feel comfortable with any of them playing center field since we haven't seen all of them play yet.
Yeah.
But certainly Dyson's a guy who, if Martin is in center field and if Dyson is in left find me a faster left fielder and a guy who can cover more ground. It's going to be a remarkable outfield for the Mariners this coming season.
And Scott Servais will have speed at the top of the order, whoever he puts there, Gene Segura or Dyson. And it's going to be a fun team to watch. And then he picks up a veteran pitcher, starting pitcher, in Giovanni Gallardo from the Baltimore Orioles. Hurt last year, so he spent some time on the disabled list. But you take a look at his numbers. When this guy was healthy, he gave you innings, quality innings. He kept you in a ball game, Shannon. And Jerry had to go out and get that veteran starting pitcher, and he found that guy in Gallardo.
Yeah, and he was able to kind of deal from an area of strength, too, in that, you know, you have these young outfielders. You can make the deals that you need to get this pitcher right now, which is a challenge this year. It was a terrible pitching market. And he was able to – what I like about Jerry, and we've seen this from him before, he's not going to be constrained by what the free agent market is.
Yeah.
And he's going to rather target and trade for what he needs rather than try and make fit in what he can buy. And Gallardo, it's not the splashiest name, but the consistency that was there up until he got hurt, up until he missed part of spring training this year, got a late start, a lot of things that can change, let alone, you know, the AL East ballpark's tough place to play too. If he can kind of somewhere fall between what he had been before and what he did last year, that's all they're asking.
Exactly. In that spot. And Aaron, there's going to be a lot of competition after Felix and Iwakuma and Paxton and now Gallardo. You have Miranda, who was very impressive last year. You have Chris Heston coming over from the San Francisco Giants, also hurt a little bit last year, but was very impressive 2 years ago, throwing a no-hitter. And also, guys, you got competition for that number five spot and hopefully more depth. And I don't think Jerry's finished by any means yet.
No, and doesn't Gallardo kind of a little bit remind you of getting Wade Miley? Hopefully the results are a little bit different, but from the standpoint of not a flashy guy, a guy who eats innings, who's had a track record of 200-inning seasons like Miley had. Obviously, it was a difficult time for Wade in Seattle, and not to say that the results are going to be the same, but they're kind of similar from what they give a rotation in terms of hopefully the consistency and the innings. And as we know, Jerry is going about each offseason with a grand total of innings pitched number in front of him and trying to check it off kind of 200 innings at a time, 180 innings at a time. Yeah. And this is a bullpen that last year went from, in some ways, kind of a soft-tossing bullpen to a fire-breathing bullpen, and that's the bullpen that the Mariners looking right now like they will begin with this season. So the bullpen appears to be an element of somewhat pretty good strength, especially with Diaz in the ninth inning. And now it's just
all year long.
Right, and now it's this issue of depth, right? The Mariners went into spring training last year with depth in the rotation, and as it turned out, they used more starting pitchers than they ever had in any season in franchise history.
Yeah.
So we know that just because you have depth doesn't mean that you're not going to need to use a lot of those pitchers, if not use ones that we don't even know about right now. So depth in the rotation is certainly something I know Jerry's going to be working on still.
And one more note, too, about Gallardo. With Milwaukee for a number of years, and with Texas a couple of years ago, this guy won 13, 14, 17, 13 games, 16 games a season, and averaged 32, 33 starts a year. So
I'm sure Jerry will talk about this a little bit, but we did have an opportunity to talk with Gallardo after after the trade, and I think a lot of this came through. But the word on him, very much a competitor, very much a student of where he is in his pitching, that he is somebody that works through things. He's not just a workhorse in terms of innings, but he's a guy, he's a couple years older, well, we all are, but he's 30 now, and he's kind of made that transition. He's a little bit different of a pitcher than he was before, but he's continually finding ways to make it work. And I think the competitiveness and also a little bit of just kind of the head part and being able to kind of figure things out, that's a very important aspect of a pitcher.
Yeah.
When you get out there and things are going wrong and you have no clue why, that's a problem. It sounds like he's veteran enough and working, you make adjustments. Exactly.
Exactly. And a lot to talk about tonight, especially for you kids out there. We're going to have, you can sign up your Little Sluggers this year for the 2017 Mariners Kids Club. And that's going to be fun out at Safeco Field. For full details on how you can become a member of the Mariners Kids Club, log on to mariners.com/kids club. We have the Mariners Caravan going on. It started yesterday with the trip out east. I'm going to be joining up on the caravan tomorrow morning in Spokane, and they've gone to Wenatchee, Walla Walla, and Spokane, and every point north and south. We're going to visit 24 communities over the next 3 weeks, and we're also going to visit with Dan Altavilla on the show tonight. Danny's on the caravan. What a year this kid had in the big leagues for the Mariners working out of the bullpen. So we're going to visit with Danny tonight. And also a reminder that Fan Fest isn't that far away. It's Saturday. My glasses hit the mic. What are you laughing at, Maddie? Saturday and Sunday, January 28th and 29th. And the players that you can come by and say hello to, visit with, Gene Segura, who the Mariners just recently acquired right around Thanksgiving, the talented shortstop who Jerry acquired from the Arizona Diamondbacks. Leonis Martin will be there. James Paxton, Mitch Haniger, also who was involved in that trade for Taijuan Walker. Danny Valencia, who's going to see some playing time over at first base. Giovanni Gallardo. So it's going to be a great fan fest, as it always is. January 28th and 29th out at Safeco Field. Welcome to our first edition of Hot Stove Baseball, live from the 710 ESPN studios here in Seattle. We're going to be back with Mariners General Manager Jerry Dipoto right after this timeout.
Back to the Hot Stove on 710 ESPN Seattle, streaming everywhere and on demand on the 710 Seattle Sports app.
This reminder, everybody, when you head out to Safeco Field this year for Mariners Fan Fest on January 28th and 29th, you can take part in season tickets. Select a seat. You choose the best seats for a full or 20-game plan season ticket package. Mariners representatives will be on hand to find the perfect seat for you to catch Mariners baseball this season. So head to FanFest the 28th and the 29th this month and join the club as a Mariners season ticket holder. Hello again, everybody. Rick Reyes, Shannon Dreher, Aaron Goldsmith, producer-engineer Kevin Kremen, and Mandy Harden. And we're going to be visiting with Mariners general manager Jerry DePoto here in the next minute or so because he's always busy. Just made the trades recently for Yovani Gallardo coming over from the Orioles in that deal for Seth Smith. Seth Smith, great guy. Did a nice job for this ball club the last couple of years from the left side of the plate. But the other trade we're very excited with, Jerod Dyson, coming over from the Kansas City Royals for Nathan Carnes. And to put him out there in the outfields we talked about and in that starting lineup gives the ball club a lot more speed at the top or the bottom part of the order, so we're really looking forward to that. Spring training, just right around the corner. Spring training dates have been announced. Shannon, February 15th, pitchers and catchers report, one of the biggest days in all of baseball. When are you going down to spring training?
I believe I'll be there on the 18th with the first full squad on the 19th. It seems like things are getting going a little bit more compressed because of the WBC.
That's right.
Which should be a pretty fun story to follow as well during spring training.
Yeah, you got a lot of the guys going to be playing in the World Baseball Classic. Puerto Rico is going to have a great team.
Edwin Diaz will be on that.
Yeah, and United States should have, a really strong ball club. And it's going to be a lot of fun, the World Baseball Classic coming up during the course of the month of March. Well, we have with us Mariners General Manager Jerry DePoto. Jerry, thanks for joining us again tonight.
My pleasure, guys. Good evening.
Good evening, and Happy New Year, buddy. Before we start talking about the recent trades that you made for Gallardo and also Dyson. When do you go down to spring training? When does it all start for you to actually leave Seattle and get down to Peoria, Arizona?
Right now, leaning toward leaving about the 8th or 9th, and I'm actually going to drive down and make sure we have an extra car down there. We've got a couple of bulldogs that don't like to fly. So we'll take our time and get down there. Right about that time, we're going to have kickoff meetings on the 13th and be ready to go with the players on the field on Valentine's Day.
And before spring training, tell us a bit about, this was a big success, I think, last year, the hitting and the pitching summits. Tell us about that.
Well, we currently have our pitching summit going on down in Peoria. It started yesterday. And, Scott Servais, Mel Stottlemyre, our player development people, Andy McKay, Mike Micucci, our new pitching coordinator, Oscar Marine, are all down there. I unfortunately was not able to get there for the pitching summit this year, but I will be there next week for the hitting, which starts next Monday. Similarly, Scott with our hitting folks will be down there. And some of it is classroom time. Some of it is gym time. Some of it is getting on the mound time. But right now we have a smattering of guys that are on the 40-man roster, some guys that are new to the organization, like a Max Posey and Rob Whalen, some guys that are returning from last year or are first-time roster players, like a Paul Fry or Thiago Vieira, and a lot of the younger players, the Andrew Moores and Nick Neiderts, et cetera. So a really good group of players down there. I've talked to Scott and to Andy both in the last 2 days, and they couldn't have enough good things to say about what's going on. And similarly with the hitters, next week we'll be down there, and we anticipate that there'll be some 40-man players down there as well. And we're looking forward to it. It was a real success for us last year to talk through philosophy, to get guys in the mode of thinking about team baseball, and it worked, and we're gonna go back to the well since it worked so well the first time.
Hey, Jerry, Aaron Goldsmith here. You mentioned Rob Whalen's name, and one of the moves you made, trading young Alex Jackson to Atlanta, you get Whalen, Posey as well in the mix to come back. Really young, only 22 years old, last year's Major League debut. Can you kind of take us through the crop of guys that you have right now, Whalen included, that you will be going to camp this year with as potential candidates for the back end of that rotation?
Yeah, well, I guess I'll start with Ariel Miranda, who know, last year was effectively our fifth starter in September and really did a heck of a job for us. And, you know, came over, joined us, and for really August and September was at times our best pitcher. Had a very good run, and he's athletic. He threw strikes. He's up to 97 with his fastball, averaged about 93, and had both a split and a changeup that we felt like worked very well. Obviously, we picked Ariel up in the Wade Miley deal with Baltimore last July. And, you know, with the Rob Whalen you mentioned, one of the trades that happened for us earlier in the offseason that I think flew under a lot of radar was the deal with the Braves with Alex Jackson and the two pitchers coming back our way. Rob Whalen's one of them. And you know, Rob's going to be 23 this year. He made a climb through three levels, started at AA last year and finished in the big leagues, and really just dominated the top two levels of the minor leagues. Between AA and AAA, tore it up and did make a half a dozen starts at the end in Atlanta for the Braves. And, you know, it's easy to look at his major league numbers and feel disappointed with the performance. But as a 22-year-old kid who started in AA and made his way to the big leagues, there's a lot there to be excited about. He's a real good competitor. He's athletic. He does pound the down part of the strike zone with sinkers and has an extremely high ground ball rate. So you got a guy who strikes him out and generally keeps it on the ground, and that's a good thing. And in addition, we picked up Max Posey in that deal, who is also a starting pitcher candidate for us. He pitched at two levels last year, finishing in double A. He is about on the same track with roughly a similar performance to this point in his minor league career as Andrew Moore, who's already in house. And the difference with Max is 6'8", throws an extreme downhill plane, fastball ranges between 89 and 95. And it's been compared to a young Doug Fister, and he pounds the strike zone. He gets him to hit it on the ground. And it's a combination of strikeouts and ground balls, again, from a particularly tall and well-angled pitcher. Both of them are pretty polished. They've done good things through the minors levels and probably deserve a chance. And I guess lastly in that group with Whalen, Posey, you can even count Andrew Moore, who I've mentioned many times throughout the course of this offseason and just in the time I've been with the Mariners. Very impressive young guy. He's got the fastball changeup are the primary two, a breaking ball he can throw for a strike in any count. He'll touch 93, 94, pitches at 91 with his fastball. We love his touch and feel, and he just knows how to pitch and compete. And he's going to come to big league camp and feel like he has a chance to show up and surprise some people with how far his development has come. And additionally, we picked up Chris Hest at the winter meetings from the Giants, as most notably a guy who threw a no-hitter for the Giants in New York in June of 2015. Had a very good season for the Giants that year, particularly the first 5 months before he ran out of gas down the stretch. But Chris is a controllable righty, throws a ton of strikes, similar theme. He gets a lot of ground balls, probably not as big a strikeout guy, but more of a ground balls guy with touch and feel, another pretty good athlete. And between Chris and, you know, Heston, Ariel Miranda, Andrew Moore, Max Posey, Rob Whalen, and then I could throw Ryan Yarbrough, who's the Southern League's Pitcher of the Year last year, in that mix. We like our group of young players, the depth, somewhere between AA, AAA, and the big leagues. We're going to have a nice array of young pitchers who can mix and match in that five spot. And we'll look to add to that group by the time we get to spring training.
The competition for the fifth starter will be something that we enjoy watching throughout the spring. But, Jerry, what about 1 through 4, the veteran group that you have there? How would you characterize what you have, and what do you need to see from this group?
Yeah, I'll start at the top with Felix. And, you know, we've talked about this before, and I guess the easy thing to do with Felix is to cite his season last year as different than the others. From a rates perspective, if Felix Hernandez shows up and doesn't jump off the bench to celebrate a home run against the Padres and effectively goes out there and pitches his 200 innings like he does every other year in his career, it looks an awful lot like the same guy from 2015 when he finished seventh in the Cy Young and won 18 games. So, you know, we're not looking for the sky to fall on Felix. we're anticipating that he comes back and he makes his 32, 33 starts. And you know, he doesn't have to be Cy Young Felix Hernandez to pitch like an ace. I guess there's being a number one and then there's being a super number one. And we're confident in Felix's ability to navigate through a major league lineup, his experiences, and his physical stuff. You know, it's easy to lose sight of the fact that his curveball, slider, and changeup are still particularly effective pitches in this league. And we saw it last year in the second half. When Felix was on with those pitches, he was still as tough as he's ever been. And, you know, we have faith that he'll be able to pull the sled. We've got Hisashi Iwakuma, who's coming off a really solid year, 199 innings and 16 wins. Kuma knows how to navigate through a lineup as well as any pitcher in the league. Scott and I have talked about this, and he can slow it down. And that's been his bread and butter. When trouble starts, he knows how to back off and go soft instead of hard. And in this league, that can be particularly effective. We saw a great step forward from James Paxton last year. The casual observer, I guess, could look at Pax and see a guy who threw 120 innings, and this isn't an acceptable number three starter. He's not durable. Truth of the matter is that Paxton did throw a complete season, and his innings total got him into the 170s, and we're very confident that he can repeat that, if not build on it. We saw a huge step forward from his from a velocity standpoint and from a consistency standpoint. So we're excited to see what James brings. And Yovani Gallardo did not have a good year in Baltimore. There's no question it was the worst year of his career. He is going to be just 31 years old. And for the 8 years prior to last year, he was about as consistent as anybody in the league in delivering that 185, 195 innings with a dozen, 13 wins and a sub 350 ERA. So he was that guy in 2015. We're banking on the fact that he can get closer to that. So that's bigger ballpark, what we think is going to be a very good outfield defense and a different division to pitch in than the American League East that he's familiar with. I think it'll be a breath of fresh air for Yovani, and that'll be how our first four line up. And frankly, the question on innings, Felix has always been roughly a 200-inning guy, actually more than that. Kuma is coming off a 200-inning season. Paxton was built up to 170, and Yovani Gallardo averages close to 185 innings a year. So if all four of them stay healthy, and I know it's a big if in anybody's rotation, we like our chances with those guys.
Jerry, we have so much ground to cover. We're going to keep you for another segment. We'll be back with Mariners General Manager Jerry Dipoto here in Hot Stove Baseball 2017 right after this timeout.
Spring training will be here before you know it. Time to talk some baseball on the Hot Stove.
On the home of the Mariners, 710 ESPN Seattle and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
And welcome back to Hot Stove 2017. Rick Ray, Shannon Dreher, Aaron Goldsmith. Producer, engineer Kevin Kremen, Matty Hart, visiting with Mariners general manager Jerry Dipoto. And Jerry, before we get more into what this ball club is looking like in 2017, we're going to go to our social media question of the night. And this comes from at PNWS Sports Guy asks, who is a candidate to be called up later in the season and make an impact like Zunino, Heredia, Diaz did last year?
Well, I think there are quite a few of them. I mentioned in the last segment, Andrew Moore certainly stands out as potentially being one of those guys coming off our minor league pitcher of the year, projects to start at the minor league levels, but could surprise people in spring training. Another guy I mentioned when we were talking about the pitching summit was Thiago Vieira. He's a huge arm. We added him to the 40-man roster. Like Edwin Diaz, he pitched it in A-ball last year. We anticipate him starting this year at Double-A with Arkansas. But and when you're averaging about 100 miles an hour with your fastball, you tend to come quickly. From a positional player perspective, tough right now to see where the room will be to find the at-bats. But Really excited about Tyler O'Neill being on the doorstep. Very good chance he will be in spring training. Very good chance that he starts the season in Tacoma. And you know, when you're that close to the big leagues, both geographically, it's a phone call away. And coming off a phenomenal year and a fantastic Arizona Fall League, and really like the progress that Tyler's made. So that's three guys right there that I think could surprise.
There you go. That's our social media question of the night. And fans, you could submit your own questions for our guest every week. Just follow the @Mariners on Twitter to learn more. Jerry, a quick question, about Jerrod Dyson. I mean, we've seen this guy for years with the Kansas City Royals, and I know you've been talking with the Royals about Jerrod Dyson for weeks. And what does he bring to this ball club in your mind?
I think he brings energy. There's a little bit of brashness to his style that I think our club will appreciate. And as much as anything else, he brings speed. And it happens. Speed happens for him. And from the time he enters the clubhouse and he starts talking to the time he gets out on the field and he plays defense and runs the bases, steals bases, and he does it with a little bit of a flair. He's a fun player to watch. And we feel like with, he serves as an igniter. Obviously Scott and the staff will have to sort through exactly how they'd like to build the lineup, but the combination of Leonis Martin, Jerrod Dyson or Jerrod Dyson, and Gene Segura hitting 9-1-2 in some combination is pretty exciting for us. I mean, that's on average, that's about 100 stolen bases a year for those three guys or something in the neighborhood. And I think they're all cresting. Gene's obviously coming off of the best season of his career. I think Jerrod Dyson is coming off the best season in his career. And Leonis Martin had a nice bounce back for us last year. So, those three guys, the element of speed and defense they bring, and really the catalyst type effect of Jerrod Dyson is one of the appeals in acquiring him.
You also mentioned how he's a little bit of a talker and he's loud. That ought to be kind of a combination with Martin, I would imagine, as well.
I can't wait to hear it. I've heard so many good things about Dyson, and speaking with him on the phone on Friday, he's immediately so easy to like. I think after we made the trade, or once we had agreed on the trade, I spent about 40 minutes on the phone with Dayton Moore, and it was, I would say 30 of those minutes were Dayton filling me in on what Jerrod Dyson is about and how much he is liked in Kansas City, from Dayton to Ned to the fan base. The players love him. He was a bit of a clubhouse leader there and kind of their source of energy. And we're just really excited to get him. I know Scott enjoyed the conversation he had with him. And this is a guy who's wired to win. And funny story. I had, we were talking, I was walking him through the way we planned on using our position player group. And once I was done, he said, "Jerry, I don't care what you ask me to do. I'll play wherever you want me to play as long as we win." I said, "Can you pitch?" He said, "I'm not sure it's the best way to use my speed, but I'll give it a shot."
Jerry DePoto, Mariners general manager, is our guest here on the Hot Stove. And Jerry, I want to talk to you about the opposite of Jerrod Dyson, and that is the home run ball. And we saw a sign of the apocalypse last year. There were more home runs hit at Safeco Field than any other ballpark in the major leagues. And the spread in some cases was kind of significant. 4 more than Yankee Stadium. Okay, that's pretty slim. 15 more home runs at Safeco Field than at Camden Yards. 21 more home runs at Safeco Field than in Arlington at Globe Life Park, home of the Texas Rangers. So it's not like they were just scraping past some of these home run friendly ballparks. This certainly caught all of us by surprise, given your comments preseason in Peoria and those of Scott Service as well. It sounds like it caught you guys by surprise as well, despite a lineup that we know can generate the long ball fairly easily in some parts. How do you see that number changing, staying the same? I'm guessing changing going into this season with the personnel group that you have.
Well, I guess first, some of that, or I don't want to say all of it, some of that had to do with the fact that going into the season, we really loaded the lineup full of left-handed hitters. And many of those hitters had home run power, whether it's Kyle Seager or Robinson Cano. Adam Lind was a 20-homer guy. Seth Smith chipped in his 15-ish We had guys that could launch. You know, Leonis Martin, a career high in home runs. And the left-hand home run hitter at Safeco Field has always been doable. And, you know, we had a lineup that greatly lent itself to left-hand power hitters. And frankly, our primary source of right-hand power was Nelson Cruz, who could hit him out of Yellowstone. So it doesn't matter where he's playing, which was obvious based on his 2015 season. But, you know, we think that number will come down some. It is still a very tough ballpark to hit home runs over the long haul. I don't think it was quite as friendly to the right-hand home run hitter. And frankly, we haven't changed our mind about the right type of team to play in Safeco Field or to sustain winning in Safeco Field. So we see the combination of a left-hand power-friendly team last year, in addition to a group of pitchers who, quite frankly, we knew going into the season were more oriented to the fly ball than the ground ball and had a penchant for giving up some homers. And, you know, unfortunately, there were a few more than we anticipated, but for the most part, I think we wound up getting more benefit out of it than our opponents, though it was pretty close. And, the good thing about the group that we're putting together this year is so many guys coming back off of really positive years. We did add a couple of ground ball guys. Particularly of note would be Mark Sepchinski, who is, I believe, close to a 70% ground ball guy. And you know, I think the penchant for home runs in our bullpen was really notable. And you know, hopefully we're able to solve some of that. I do really like how our outfield defense stacks up, and let's force them to hit it over the wall to score a run.
Run prevention, right? That is huge now. And it really has been. Jerry, 35 trades since you took over this franchise in September of 2015, involving about 85 players. I think there's 9 or 10 guys remaining on the 40-man roster since then. Did you see that amount of wheeling and dealing when you surveyed the landscape here? And how close is this ball club to being set after so many trades over the last couple of ball seasons?
Well, I guess first to start with the first question, yeah, you know, when I interviewed here in September of 2015, and sometimes context is important, it's fair to remember that we had a 40-man roster at the time, finishing the 2015 season. I think 14 of the 40 players were just finishing up what was a negative WAR season, which is kind of hard to believe. But there were 14 players finishing a season where they were sub-replacement level in their performance. And there were another 9 who were out of options and had yet to establish themselves at the big league level. So a lot of the turnover from 2015 to 2016 was effectively pending free agents, out of options players, and players who were coming off of years, frankly, that they struggled. And, you know, that necessitates some degree of change, and we weren't shy about it. And I did walk ownership through the general idea when we started to make the roster moves. Frankly, I had no idea it would result in that many trades. I would prefer it would have been one trade for multiple players that would have solved our needs. But it's almost like a shell game where you're moving the shell and you're constantly trying to move down the field. And you know, it's moving the roster piece, trying to figure out how one guy fits for a year, and it might get you over a bridge, and it creates a window to get to the next player. And that's effectively what we did. Nori Aoki and Adam Lind and Deho Lee, a variety of guys who came in and did a heck of a job for us on one-year deals. And for the most part, we knew that those players were more likely to be one-year fits. And we still have roughly the same core players with, you know, Cruz and Cano and Seager and Felix and Kuma, even some of the younger guys like Paxton and Zunino. A lot of real familiar faces. And I talked for so long about getting younger, more athletic, and building a team that we thought fit the ballpark. And, you know, enter guys like Gene Segura and now Gerard Dyson, Mitch Haniger, Ben Gamble, Guillermo Heredia. Really excited about this group. Feel like we're a nice mix of veteran and young player. We are a more sustainable product, I believe. we're excited to see how it comes together and put that together with, I think, with what is a very improved bullpen, and it gives us all a lot of hope for 2017.
Jerry, I believe last year, right when you had it all put together and heading into spring training, you said that it was an 85, I believe, to 87 win team on paper. If things broke right, you win more. If they break wrong, you win less. Do you have this team nailed down yet in a number sense?
Yeah, I'd love to tell you that I can pick the number out of thin air, which seemed to happen last year. I think we're a better team than we were last year. We're a deeper roster. We're more versatile. We can do different things. I don't think we changed dynamically from the offensive model. If anything, got more diverse without giving away the things that we were good at. You consider we anticipate getting plus power from catcher all the way around the infield for the position, and we're not going to be a big power outfield, but we do anticipate getting some from Mitch Haniger and a contribution from Leonis in center. And the pitching staff, by my mind, we finished third in the American League in ERA last year, and effectively to date we've changed two bodies and we've built up a good deal of depth around the group. So if we can keep those front four starters healthy, and taking their turn every fifth day, and the rest of the team does the things that they're going to do, really feel like this team, at least on paper, and unfortunately we don't get to play the games on paper, is every bit as good or better than the team we lined up last year. I thought that team was an 85 to 87 win team, and we needed some things to break our way, and unfortunately they really didn't. I think if things break our way this year, we have a chance to be better than that and potentially significantly better than that because of the upside of some of the young players.
Just a couple of more minutes with Jerry Dipoto. Jerry, after kind of the dust settled and everybody was able to take a deep breath after the end of last season, what were your conversations with first-year manager Scott Servais like?
I thought Scott did a terrific job. And I told him so, by the end of the season, because of what a grind it was and the way we lost that last weekend, particularly that Saturday night game to Oakland, hey, everybody was emotionally toasted for Sunday, and it was tough to have any type of productive conversation. I know particularly you guys were there, and I know, Shannon, you probably saw Scott's face after that Saturday game. He was in no mood to reminisce about how the season went. We did talk, and we spent a lot of time after the season talking about all the different things that he experienced for the first time. And, the one thing we kept coming back to was just Nelson Cruz and Robinson Cano and how much easier they made his job. And, that's not something that we would have bet on or that we could have anticipated. But I think both of those guys really took a marked interest in helping Scott develop as a manager, allowing him to put his mark on the clubhouse. And in return, Scott gave them that freedom to kind of run the ship in there. And I think he did a remarkable job. We have talked for over a year now about the want to play a fast game. And it's a spring training of 2016. We let the dogs loose, so to speak. We ran around, we had fun, and it was an exciting game. Unfortunately, that type of roster that we were able to throw out there with 58 players in spring training was unrealistic for us in the regular season. I think now we're closer to the model that both of us envisioned having when we got here. And we've talked about that a ton. And, now what we talk about is bullpen matchups and lineup machinations. And I talked to Scott last night, and I think he is particularly excited to get to spring, and he's perfectly content with going to spring with the group we have now. It feels like we have a good team.
Well, Jerry, this is going to be a fun, exciting season. You've worked so hard over the last couple of months putting this ball club together, engineering this franchise, and not just the at the big league level, but throughout the organization as well. It's exciting to see now the new guys with the uniforms on, the names on their backs, and I can't wait for spring training. Jerry, thanks so much for joining us tonight on our first edition of the 2017 Hot Stove Show, and we'll see you here real soon.
I look forward to it, guys. Thanks for having me.
Jerry, thank you very much. General Manager Jerry DePoto of the Mariners, and we're going to be back with more here in the first hour of Hot Stove Baseball 2017, live from our 710 ESPN studios here in Seattle. We'll be back.
We're cranking up the Hot Stove on the home of the Mariners, 710 ESPN Seattle and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
All right, beginning to wind down the first hour of two here on Hot Stove 2017. Rick Ray, Shannon Dreyer, Aaron Goldsmith, producer-engineer Kevin Kremen, who just had Jerry DePoto on here in the first hour. Shannon, what are your thoughts about the way this ball club is going to look, the way this ball club is going to play here in 2017 with the additions?
I think year two, I think tremendous progress made in the roster that Jerry DePoto has wanted to make. And I think the biggest difference that I see in putting it together last year and this year is you don't see the risk-reward players that we saw a year ago. And, you know, it's first year in, and you can only do so much, and you roll the dice with a bunch of players. And the thing that was really great to learn about DePoto was that if it doesn't work, he was willing to move on fairly quickly.
Yeah.
So I hope we don't have to see that as much this year, but when you look at the players that he brought in, much more established track records, most not coming off injury. And when I look at it, the only real risk-reward would be Gallardo, who had a tough season last year with some extenuating circumstances, it would appear. So to me, that's very different, plus the influx of youth. We are going to see rookies in the lineup every day.
I like Vogel back at first base, Haniger
right.
in right field, Ben Gamel. And, Aaron, your thoughts about this ball club? I grew up in Chicago. We had the Go-Go White Sox. I don't know if we'll be the Go-Go White Sox of 1999.
No, I think it's the second coming, Rico. I think it's right there with them.
They're going to run, and I love that brand of baseball.
Sure, and you know, one of the things that stood out talking with Jerry, I was curious and looking it up during the break when he talked about the home run ball, especially by Mariners relievers. Mariners bullpen gave up the sixth most home runs last year in the majors. Of course, the Reds, remember the Reds bullpen? It was like we were tracking if they could break, and they did. They gave up over 100 home runs. The Mariners bullpen, 71. And I remember having this conversation with Blow just very casually a year or two ago, and he and I were talking about, okay, you're pitching at Safeco Field. It's a pitcher's ballpark. You can get away with, a la Chris Young, a deep fly ball to the warning track and survive more times than not.
Right there all the time.
Right there. And so I kind of said to Mike, okay, well, if that's the case, do you really mind if you have a bunch of fly ball pitchers? And we kind of kicked the can around the block a little bit. And the conclusion that that we discussed and eventually came up with was, yeah, at Safeco Field where you play half your games, you could survive that. But you're going to play in some places where you want the ground ball. The ground ball plays everywhere. So hearing him talk about Zibchinski coming over in the bullpen, a guy with an extremely high ground ball rate, and a couple of the young potential starters that we could see, maybe not in the rotation in April, but maybe in the rotation as the season goes along, you can tell that the emphasis there is there on keeping the ball on the ground. And for Gallardo, I looked up his numbers as well during the break, and he's right. The ground ball rate was at one of the lowest in his career since about 2010. So I think that's going to be something that we'll want to see if Gallardo can do whatever you have to do to keep the ball on the ground more. That's going to be certainly an emphasis.
And that's a great thing for the Mariners. If the pitchers can keep the ball on the ground, you got Seager there at third, who's already won a Gold Glove a few years ago. Segura did a nice job last year. Robbie Cano and Valencia Volga back in first base. All right, time for our 40th anniversary trivia question. How about this? It's the 40th anniversary of the franchise, and here we go. The question tonight is, Edgar Martinez hit a grand salami, as Dave Niehaus called it, in the eighth inning to break a tie in Game 4 of the 1995 Division Series against the Yankees. Who was on the mound for New York? The winner receives a Robbie Cano home replica jersey featuring a 40th anniversary commemorative patch that is going to be worn on all jerseys in 2017. Wear what the players wear. Call right now, 206-421-3776 or 866-979-3776. 3776. 206-421-3776. 866-979-3776. Who was on the mound for the Yankees when Edgar hit the Grand Slam Game 4 of the Division Series? Back with more and the winner after this.
The Mariners make moves.
They want to trade with the Baltimore Orioles.
Bolstering the rotation.
Giovanni Gallardo.
Adding speed.
Dyson on at first base. There he goes. Pitch on the way. Inside a ball. And safe at second is Dyson.
Upgrading the outfield.
Caught with a diving catch by Dyson.
What's next for the Mariners? Time to talk some baseball. This is the Hot Stove on 710 ESPN Seattle. 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome back to the second hour of Hot Stove Baseball 2017. Rick Riz along with Shannon Dreyer. Looking great tonight as usual. Aaron Goldsmith, producer-engineer Kevin Kremen, and Maddie Harden. It was great to have Mariners GM Jerry DePoto on the first hour. And now we get ready for the second hour of Hot Stove. A little bit later on, we're going to be visiting with Larry Stone of the Seattle Times. But also, we're going to catch up with Dan Altavilla, young pitcher who did a really, really impressive job. First time around in the big leagues last year, had an ERA of under one. But right now, let's talk about the trivia question. We're going to give you the answer. We're going to tell you about the question before we give you the answer. The question was, Edgar Martinez hit a grand salami in the eighth inning to break a tie in Game 4, the 1995 Division Series against the Yankees. Who was on the mound for New York? And let's go to the audio vault for the answer.
And John Wetland one more time set. And here comes the 2-2 pitch to Edgar Martinez down. The fastball swung on and hit the deep center field. Bernie Williams goes back and it is get out the rye bread and the mustard this time, Grandma. It is a grand salami. And the Mariners lead it 10-6. I don't believe it. My, oh, my.
How about that? Kevin and I were sitting next to the man when he made that call. Dave Niehaus, the one and only. Tremendous call.
And beautifully engineered.
Yes. the levels, Kevin, were outstanding. So Hall of Fame producer-engineer Kevin Kremen.
It's a little things.
It is. It's a little things. Tremendous call by David. And we have a winner. Our winner is Andrew Brown, who knew the answer was John Wetland, who later on would become the pitching coach for the Mariners some years later. Andrew Brown from Seattle, congratulations. You're the winner of the Robinson Cano home replica jersey featuring the 40th anniversary commemorative patch. Congratulations to Andrew Brown, knowing that John Wetland was the guy that gave up that grand salami to Edgar Martinez. And by the way, we'll be talking more about Edgar a little bit later on in the show about his Hall of Fame votes. He's getting a higher and higher percentage. All right, let's go on the road. The Mariners caravan kicked off yesterday to Eastern Washington. Mariner pitcher Dan Altavilla is on the road right now with guys from the Mariners Community Relations Department. Dan, how you doing, and where are you, buddy?
Hi, thanks for having me. Well, we're actually on the road to Spokane right now. We just left Wenatchee, so we're doing well.
What are you guys doing in Wenatchee? Talking with the kids and talking about the Dream Team?
Right. Yeah, we started off in Yakima, and then we went to Wenatchee today. But two similar days. We started off with an elementary school. We talked about the Dream Team, and it was great. The kids were awesome. They were all excited to be there. They were all loving the moose. So.
He's and the hit of the show.
We stopped by the radio station to do some liners, and then we finished off with the public appearance and Q&As for the fans. Fans are great. So we're all having a good time here.
Dan, is this your first opportunity to be in that part of the state?
It is. Yep, first time here. First time in Yakima, first time in Wenatchee. I actually played in Spokane whenever I was with Everett, so that'll be nice to head back there for a little while.
Okay, so you've done the pass driving, probably without the snow, though.
Yeah, minus the snow, but Pittsburgh had some snow whenever I was there, so nothing new.
Hey, Dan, this is Aaron. First of all, I got to say, judging by the pictures I've seen put out by the Mariners on social media, I'm disappointed, man. You got rid of the flow, and that flow was it was fantastic last year, man. You're high and tight now. This
I knew
is
we couldn't compete
this
with
is,
Gamble.
Well, Gamble is. Tell me, have you tried? And no, but this is off the record. Have you tried to run your fingers through Gamble's hair yet? Because it's like the mane of a prize winning horse, isn't it? It's incredible.
Incredible flow Gamble has. Yeah, I definitely didn't run my fingers through.
Yeah. Okay, well, it looks incredible. And yours last year, Dan, I thought it was great, but yeah, moving on. Last year, Dan, sensational work from you, making the jump from Double-A to the big leagues. We all remember your debut in Chicago, and, you were pumping 100-plus like it was nothing. What stands out to you the most when you go back and think of last year?
I think something that stands out the most is just making that jump to the big leagues and, you know, going right after guys, even though that it's on a bigger stage. But, you know, just keeping my same mentality and not letting the pressure get to me. So I think that was the biggest part for me.
I think it was the flow and your control that got you to the big leagues. But where did you get that? Because only one walk last year, 12, 13 appearances, the 10 strikeouts, you throw hard, you know, your velocity is way up there in the high 90s. You can reach triple digits. How did it all come together for you at AA? What was the biggest difference?
It all started in AA whenever I was with my pitching coach, Andrew Lorraine. I was messing around with the windup, and we finally scratched that and just went straight from the stretch. And right there, I got better direction and got a little more on my fastball, and I was just able to lock in on the catcher's mitt a little bit more. So I think it all started right there whenever I scratched the windup and went to the stretch. And that's been a big part of my success just last year.
Dan, you were a starter prior to the start of last year. You begin your year in AA, and before you know it, you're in the big leagues. But what did you learn about the mentality of being a reliever? A little bit different coming in the middle of the game than it is at the beginning, let alone at the big league level. What was the progression of that as you were learning in the transition in the minors, and then when you got to the big leagues?
Right. That was definitely a little bit of adjustment for me, coming into a game where, you know, guys are on base and, you know, a critical point in the game where you want to leave them stranded. So I think it just took a little bit of time coming in and getting that first pitch strike out of the way. But once I got more comfortable out there on the mound, not really worrying about the runners too much. But, yeah, getting that first pitch strike was big for me. And, you know, I just really ran with it and went from there, especially into the big leagues.
We're joined by Dan Altavilla on the Mariners caravan, as you might be able to tell. He's making his way across the pass. And, Dan, when you think back to last season, and we mentioned you make the big jump, just like Edwin Diaz did from Jackson to Seattle, who was the one guy that really stands out to you that helped to kind of take you under their wing and do everything from to show you where the bus picks you up at the hotel to just how to be a big leaguer?
Right. I can't really single one guy out because everyone in the bullpen, they were tremendous guys. As soon as I walked in, they were just open arms and took me under their wing. See, anywhere from Cishek, Vincent, Scribner, Vendetti, he helped me out a lot. And, you know, just the combination of everybody. Even if I had any questions, I would just go to them guys and they'd be happy to answer for me. So, you know, I don't want to single out one guy because everyone in the bullpen really helped me out.
Did Pat try to get you to throw left-handed?
He did. I actually played catch with him every day. Cishek and I, Cishek would get his right arm and I'd get his left arm. So,
hey, Dan.
It was a good experience.
Yeah. Danny, last year there were some really good stories with young players, and you were definitely one of them, making that jump from AA. But a guy with you at AA was Edwin Diaz, who was starting. And all of a sudden, on May the 10th, they said, you know what, you're going to start relieving. What was it like to see yourself, along with Edwin Diaz, play such a big role in the bullpen at the big leagues?
You know, I was so happy for Diaz whenever he made that transition to the bullpen, because I know he had that extra in the tank whenever he'd come out there and he'd be throwing 99 to 101, just blowing guys away in AA. And whenever he went up to the big leagues and he was just dominating, that's whenever I knew that, you know, he was just with me. And, you know, if I just keep the right mindset, that I could go up there and do the same thing he's doing. And I'm really happy and fortunate that it worked out.
Well, Danny, you did a great job last year. We're looking forward to what you're going to add to this bullpen in 2017. It's going to be a lot of fun this year. Enjoy the rest of the caravan. I'm going to be joining up with you guys tomorrow in Spokane. So have a great time on the rest of the caravan, buddy. Thanks for joining us tonight.
All right. Thank you very much for having me. Look forward to seeing you.
All right. Mariner reliever Dan Altavilla. We're going to be back with, I think, one of the best writers in the game of baseball, covering the Mariners for such a long time, Larry Stone from the Seattle Times. A lot to talk about and cover with Larry, including the Baseball Hall of Fame balloting. We'll be back with Larry right after this timeout.
The Hot Stove on the home of the Mariners, 710 ESPN Seattle and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Say, friends, the time is now to join the club as a Mariner season ticket holder. Lock in the best seats at the best prices to catch all of the action at Safeco here in 2017, just right around the corner. For more information on the many benefits you're going to enjoy as a season ticket holder, log on to mariners.com/17. Get your season tickets. It's going to be a fun and exciting season. Rick Riz, Shannon Dreher, Aaron Goldsmith, producer-engineer Kevin Kremen, and right now on the radio with us, I think one of the best writers in the game of baseball, Larry Stone from the Seattle Times. And Larry, a lot going on as the teams are getting ready. Here it is, early January. Spring training is right around the corner. But I want to talk to you about the Hall of Fame balloting and Edgar Martinez, who has been picking up steam. He's gone from 27% to 44% last year. Right now he's at 67.4%. How has Edgar gained that momentum over the last couple of years? And by the way, welcome to the show, buddy.
Thanks. Great to hear your voices, all three of you. It reminds me that my favorite time of the year, spring training, is about a month away, so I'm real excited about that. There's a few things going on with Edgar. I think part of it is that there's just more room on the ballot. That's been an issue for a few years. You know, we've talked about this before. The ballots have stacked up over the last 7 or 8 years as guys, you know, some guys with steroids connections that get enough votes to stay on the ballot, but they don't get enough to get in, you know, specifically Bonds and Clemens. So, you know, you're only allowed to vote for 10. And I think Edgar was knocked off the ballot by a few people who wanted to vote for him but didn't have room. And then last year, Piazza and Junior got in. Alan Trammell was no longer on the ballot because his 15 years were up. So there was maybe some spots that opened up. I think the David Ortiz DH farewell tour helped Edgar in the fact that, you know, there was a lot of talk about how Big Papi was going to be a surefire first ballot Hall of Famer, which got people looking at Edgar. If Ortiz can make it as a DH, and if you really study Edgar's stats, I know a lot of people have argued with me on this, but in a lot of ways his stats are the equal of or superior to Ortiz if you look beyond the home runs, the counting numbers. And then there's been a lot of people who have on the internet have made really persuasive cases for Edgar to go in. They've crunched his numbers. Some really good writers like Jay Jaffe of Sports Illustrated and Jonah Carey, Joe Posnanski, they've all advocated for Edgar, along with a lot of people here in Seattle. And I think, that helps. That's how Burt Blyleven got in his last try or next to last try, with a lot of people just started making his case and won over a lot of people. So it all bodes well for, you know, it looks like he's going to get into the 60s this year, which, you know, I would have, when we had this conversation last year, I frankly thought that Edgar had no chance. You know, his eligibility went down from 15 years to 10 years. They changed the rule. You know, Trammell was grandfathered in at 15, as is Lee Smith, it's his last year. But, you know, Edgar has this year, next year, and the year after, and I didn't think he had a chance. But if he gets into the 60s, looks like he's going to now, he's just right on the doorstep. And, you know, with a tremendous amount of momentum building, I suddenly really like his chances now.
Larry, I like them too. And one of the fun things to watch, and I'm sure you follow Ryan Thibodeau on Twitter because he's got the at not Mr. Tibbs, he's got the kind of end of all and Hall of Fame trackers, and to see the numbers coming in. But you also see the ballots of those who make them public, and to see guys that you mentioned talking to people, but to see John Heyman, Scott Miller, Danny Noble, all of these people, they'd never voted for him before. I know I've had conversations with all of them, yet this year is the year. You know that word of mouth is, you know, that conversations are going on and all that's helping. What are the conversations that you've had with people?
Yeah, Shannon, I wrote a column about 2 weeks ago, and I tried to call every person who at that time had changed their vote to add Edgar to find out why. And, you know, I just gave you a lot of the reasons that I heard from these guys. I talked to quite a few, probably a dozen. And there's been, now it's up to 30, of the known 185 ballots that Ryan Thibodeau, who you just mentioned, has tabulated. More Edgar's had more additions this year than anybody. The next closest is Tim Raines at 25, and Raines is probably going to go into the Hall of Fame this year. But yeah, and I, you know, you're right. I think it builds upon himself. Nobody wants to vote. You know, there's some subconscious things I think that go on voters. When a guy starts to pick up momentum like that, you look at it and think, well, what am I missing? And you give it another look. And you know, if a guy's at 10 or 20%, nobody kind of wants to throw away their vote, even if, you know, if it's a borderline thing. I think that plays into it. So the more momentum he gets, the more momentum that builds, and I think that's going to continue to grow. And the other thing that bears mentioning, I think, is that I've seen this before, and it's been documented. As you get into the final years on the ballot, voters realize that this is now or never, you know, and you give it a much closer look, and I think you give the guy the benefit of the doubt. You know, Orlando Cepeda, I remember, because I was, you know, following that story closely when I worked in the Bay Area. I think his next to the last or last time on the ballot, he surged and got in. You know, Raines is his last year on the ballot, Blylevin. You see it in a lot of cases where, you know, you can't just say, okay, he'll get in next year, I'll look at him next year. It's the time of reckoning, and that's nearing for Edgar. You've got, like I said, next year and the year after. So I think that will help him pick up some support as well.
Hey, Stoney, it's Aaron. Happy New Year, man. Thanks for joining us here
tonight. Yeah, you too, Aaron. Good to talk to you.
Hey, I'm curious. You had the chance to be around Edgar, to cover Edgar for so many years, and I'm curious any stories that you might have that stand out to you about Edgar that maybe never went to press, or maybe even did go to press. But we know we love spending time with Edgar. That is when we can, because he's in the film room or in the cage about 23 hours a day, it seems like. But is there anything that stands out to you when you think back to Edgar? Obviously, his performance on the field stands out. But is there anything else about Edgar the guy that stands out?
Yeah, you know, one thing that does stand out, Aaron, is I had the tremendous privilege in 2001, I believe it was. I'm almost positive it was Alex had left the Mariners, and the Texas Rangers opened the season in Puerto Rico, the first game ever played there. So the Seattle Times sent me to Puerto Rico to cover that, because, you know, it's first game after leaving the Mariners. And while I was there, I arranged this with Edgar to go to his hometown of Dorado, to go to his old neighborhood, he set me up with relatives who still live there. And so I basically spent a day in his neighborhood, you know, a real lower class, poor neighborhood, and went to his family home, met his friends, went to the stand where he used to get, rice and beans, and it's just a tremendous day, and the people that I met were so gracious, and you could see where he got his the manner that made everybody love him here in Seattle. So I really felt I got to know him and where he came from and his story far greater after spending that day and part of the next day in Dorado, Puerto Rico.
So many great stories with Edgar. He told me the one where his parents were moving the family to New York and he didn't want to go. He hid on the roof of his house. They couldn't find him. And so the mom and dad were looking all over for him. They finally found him, and the grandparents said, listen, he doesn't want to go. Let him stay here in Dorado. We'll take care of him. Mom and dad and the brother went to New York, and Edgar stayed there hiding on the roof. Eventually he came down.
Yeah, exactly. I
love that story.
Delved into that story when I wrote this piece. I went into the backyard where him and his
Carmelo,
his cousin Carmelo would hit rocks, you know, bat around rocks, and he would even hit raindrops
with a broomstick. Yeah. Falling off the
with a broomstick or a bat, you know. Yeah. That's how he honed his batting eye. So, I distinctly remember going to this little cafe kind of place, and it was just it had pictures of Edgar all over the place. He was a hero in his town. There were pictures of him with Team Puerto Rico from the Dominican from the Winter League, and just. you know, years later, he would come back every year and have a fundraising event. I'm sure he still does. And he's just a hero in that town.
Yeah, we love him here. I was driving north on I-5, and I see the sign, Edgar Martinez Drive, right there on I-5, and there it is, Edgar Martinez Drive. Okay, I'd love to see this guy get in for all kinds of reasons. Who's who are the other guys on your ballot, Larry? Who's going to get in?
Well, I think this is yet another thing, Rick, that bodes well for Edgar, is that there's five guys who are on the borderline of getting in, and if even three get in,
it off
will
the ballot.
Clear the ballot even
yeah.
more next year and leave some space for him to, you know, for the ones who use all the 10 spots, which isn't everybody, but a pretty big. Percentage. So the more that get in, the better it is for Edgar. But, you know, Jeff Bagwell and Tim Raines are almost locks to get in. They're both over 90% on the Thibodeau list. Vlad Guerrero and Pudge Rodriguez, who are first-timers on the ballot, they're both right at 74-75%. Actually, Pudge Rodriguez is even higher at about 80%. And then you got Trevor Hoffman, who is right now it's 73%, but I think he's got a real good shot. So there's five guys. I voted for all five of those. You know, I voted for Bonds and Clemens. We can have that debate, but I voted for them every time they've been on the ballot. Mussina and Schilling. And is that 10? I voted for 10. I think Edgar. I think I named the 10 that I voted for there.
Oh yeah, that's 10. Yeah.
Yeah. Edgar was the first name I checked.
Yeah. Good job, Larry.
The first name I checked, except for last year when Griffey was the first name I checked.
Talk to some of your brethren about checking that box there for Edgar Martinez. Visiting with Larry Stone from the Seattle Times. More baseball to talk with one of the best writers in the game of baseball. We'll be back with Larry right after this.
Back to the Hot Stove on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming everywhere and on demand on the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Our first Hot Stove show of 2017 continues, winding down the second hour with Larry Stone from the Seattle Times. Rick Riz, along with Shannon Dreher and Aaron Goldsmith, and producer-engineer Kevin Kremen. Larry, still a lot going on in baseball. Jerry DePoto has been as busy as anybody in the game. A lot of changes, recent trades, Gallardo coming over from Baltimore, Dyson coming over from the Kansas City Royals. More speed in that lineup. We talked with Jerry in the first hour. What do you think about the Go-Go Mariners this year?
Yeah, it's not what we're used to seeing, but with Dyson and Segura, I think they combined for 63 stolen bases last year. So,
throwing
Martin. You know, the disruption on the bases can't do anything but help when you've got the big boppers behind them and Seager, Cruz, and Cano. So, I think that's what the kind of team Jerry envisioned when he took the job. He talked about getting more athletic and faster, and certainly they have an outfield now that fits both those categories and should be really good defensively as well. There's a question in my mind. You've got a couple of rookies that are going to be playing prominent roles in Haniger and Vogelbach. We got to see their minor league numbers are good, but they still have to show it at the major league level. And those guys are going to be a huge, a huge key for this team, I think.
Larry, a year ago this time, I think Jerry probably was on move number 40 since taking over. But, the biggest move was hiring the manager. And we just had so many questions because we didn't know. We hadn't seen it yet. How are these two going to operate? How are they going to operate together? What is the impact going to be on the team, and what's this team going to look like? How do you sum up everything that we saw from DePoto and Service in their first year, and what questions were answered for you?
Well, yeah, Service, I did have questions. This is a guy that had never managed, not just at the major league level, but really at any level. But I've got to say that he did win me over. I thought he handled the team extremely well. He got them to buy in to all the things that he was preaching, the togetherness and the cohesiveness and all that stuff, and the own the zone or I can't remember now what that expression was.
Control the zone.
That's a good one, though.
Control
I like owning
the zone.
I like owning the zone. Own that thing. Edgar did.
He sure did.
Yeah.
I think he just, by the end of the season, he was acting like a guy who had managed for quite a while. You know, as for DePoto, he had not an easy task. He had to pretty much, and it's still a work in progress, kind of reshape the team into, his image, his vision. And you don't do that overnight. He was the handicapped with the fact that they have let's be honest about it, the minor league system right now is not teeming with prospects, so that makes it hard both to replenish the major league talent and to use his trade chips. So he's had to work around that and be creative. And, you know, last year was a step in the right direction, and now we'll see what year two holds.
Now, Stoney, last year the national perspective on Felix was one of just great demise, right? People would point at his walk rate increasing for what was the third straight year, his strikeout rate decreasing, of course, landed on the disabled list, which is something we're just not used to seeing from Felix. So his incredible streak of 30-plus starts and 200 innings came to a close. I'm not totally sure what to expect from Felix this year. I know he'll be fired up to make amends from last season, but obviously command was the biggest issue in my eyes, even more so than what people would want to point to at any drop in velocity. What did you see for Felix last year, and what are you hoping, or what do you think we're going to see from the King come this season?
Yeah, you know, you're right. Yeah, I think you've hit it, Aaron. I mean, if I were to name all the critical points for the Mariners, I'd put that number one is, can Felix come back and be Felix again, or close to Felix? Because if not, that was the one thing that you could pencil in at the beginning of every season. Well, they have a number one pitcher, and then let's see what they can do around that. And last year, you know, he wasn't the number one dominant guy that he had been. I think he touched on a lot of it. There was the health issue, which he had been healthy up until last year, and he had the leg injury. The velocity declined. The command declined. I think that the last time I remember him having an off season where there were so many questions, I still remember when he came to that spring training luncheon that the Mariners throw, and he walked in there, and everybody kind of gasped just because of how good he looked and the physical condition he was in. He had dedicated himself. This was early in his career after, you know, the one off year that he had in his career up until last year. And then I think he became a Cy Young runner-up that year and then won it the year after that. And I think we'll see if I think it's the offseason that's going to require the same sort of commitment and dedication from him. And I think he's a prideful guy that will take that to heart and, you know, work hard. I think he needs probably to work harder to get back into shape and commit himself and so, you know, I still think that, you know, his stuff is still there. You know, maybe even if the velocity is down, the movement, if he can just get the command, he can still be an extremely effective pitcher, I think.
Larry, last year the ball club was so close to getting to the playoffs, just two wins away. Every game was relevant last year except game 162, the tough loss, game 161 against the Oakland A's. At home. Last year, as you just mentioned, Felix was on the DL for 6 weeks. Didn't have Felix for 6 weeks, and it wasn't Felix in the second half. Taiwan Walker struggled. Norioki didn't have his typically great on-base percentage in the first half of the season. Came on in the second half. Didn't have Paxton in the first 2 months. And a number of other stories. A kid eventually would get to this ball club and become the closer of the team in Edwin Diaz. And they were still just two wins away from the playoffs. Besides Felix being Felix, what else has to go right for this ball club to get to the playoffs for the first time since 2001?
Well, Rick, I think the rest of the rotation has to coalesce around Felix. You know, there's a few questions even beyond Felix. You know, Iwakuma is 36. He had a really good year last year, but he's got a lot of wear and tear on his arm. You know, Paxton has yet to do it for a full year. We talked at length about Gallardo. And then, you know, the number five spot's still kind of up in the air. So I think the number one thing for me is that the rotation has to solidify. Mm-hmm. You know, having Diaz in the closing job from the beginning will should strengthen that. We'll have to see how the setup relief builds around it, but they have a lot of, you know, there's a lot of good arms. Altuve, Cishek when he's healthy, and a few others. And as I mentioned before, I still have to see it from the two young guys that they're counting on pretty heavily, Vogelbach and Haniger. And, you know, Zunino is another question. I liked what I saw for the most part last year, but he still needs to get that average up. He's got the defensive skills. He's got the power. Really, all he needs to do is hit in the 230 or 240 range. But, you know, I do think he has that in him, but he's also, you know, still hasn't done it. So, you know, there's a few questions, but you still have that strong core that a lot of teams would kill for in Seager, Cano, and Cruz, and now you've added Segura with the guys that I mentioned earlier. We all mentioned Dyson and the running game that they could have now. So it could be a dynamic offense. But to answer your question, the long-winded answer, but I think the number one question to really put this team over the top is for the rotation to come together.
We're visiting with Larry Stone of the Seattle Times. And, Larry, we just have a couple more minutes, but I'm kind of curious to get your thoughts. Such a good feeling around baseball after the playoffs, the World Series. Viewership was up. Good things happened. They got through the labor with no problems. How do they kind of pick up on this momentum? What do you look for and what would you like to see in baseball kind of moving forward as far as just kind of picking up from how the year ended and kind of the excitement you saw around the game?
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing is for a good year for me is a lot of good tight pennant races, parity, you know.
And a pitch block, Larry, is that what you're going to say? And a pitch block?
And I think that's where baseball has been headed the last few years. Is, you know, it used to have the baseball used to have this reputation as, oh, the same team win. It's all about the money, and money certainly helps, but there's been a lot of diversity in teams that have contended. You've had lower budget teams like the, you know, Indians don't have a huge payroll. You know, the Rays have been in the World Series, et cetera. And I think now that the parity is the best I've seen it, you know, in many, many years. And, you know, I think to me, that's the number one thing. The other thing is there's a lot of good young stars in the game right now. It's kind of like a golden era for young talent, a sort of a transition to the new group of superstars, and I think that bodes well as well.
And in 2016, the story, the Chicago Cubs finally won their World Series, 108 years, Larry.
That was incredible. You know, now we have the Red Sox have theirs, and the Cubs have theirs. And
curses are
gone. It was an amazing World Series. That Game 7 was an all-timer. You know, when Rajay Davis hit that home run, I thought the Indians were going to actually do it and come back and win that thing. But the Cubs held on. And, I think that was really good for baseball. Just like when the Red Sox won it in 2004, that galvanized everybody. Yeah, I'm sure as a Chicago guy, Rick, you were a White Sox guy, though, right?
I was both. I came home from school. My mother was a huge Cub fan. Yeah, I was both. And I was glad to say, because when I came home from school, the game was on. My mother was a huge Cub fan. She loved Ron Santo and Ernie Banks. And then my dad comes home, and we watch the White Sox. You listen on the radio at night. I had the best of both worlds. Hey, when you're 6, 7 years old, it said Chicago on the jersey. And I loved them both. And folks on the north side are really.
Well, I'm sure you were ecstatic then to watch that.
I was for my mother, you know, there in baseball heaven. But, Larry, thank you so much. I'm excited about this year. Can't wait to see you at spring training. Thanks for joining us tonight, buddy.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks a lot.
Larry Stone from the Seattle Times. And we'll be back with more to wind down our first edition of Hot Stove Baseball here in 2017. Right after this.
Spring training will be here before you know it. Time to talk some baseball on the Hot Stove.
On the home of the Mariners, 710 ESPN Seattle and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
And we've been talking baseball for the last 2 hours here on Hot Stove 2017, and it's been a lot of fun. And talk about fun, Mariners Fan Fest is
right around the corner. Head to Safeco Field Saturday, January 28th and Sunday the 29th, where you're going to enjoy great experiences, including running the bases with the kids, touring the Mariners clubhouse, playing catch in the outfield, and more. Plus, some of your favorite Mariners are going to be on hand for autographs and photo opportunities. Tickets are $10 and free for kids 14 and under. Pick up yours right now at Mariners.com/FanFest. Some of the players are going to be at FanFest. Gene Segura, the Mariners' new shortstop. Leonis Martin, fine year last year. James Paxton, Mitch Haniger, Danny Valencia, and new Mariners starting pitcher, Yovani Gallardo, is going to be there. Folks, I want to talk for a minute about a story that was on television about a week ago concerning the Rainier Beach High School baseball program. They could really, really use our help. They've had very, very little funding down through the years. I had the pleasure of meeting their head baseball coach, Gerald Smiley, talked to him about a week ago, and we got together today at Safeco Field. And their needs are very, very great for their program, bats, balls, uniforms, and other equipment to have these kids have a chance to play at the high school baseball level. Our Toys for Kids charity was very successful this year. Shannon, you were there, Kevin, Aaron. And so we made a donation to help out the Rainier Beach High School program. And Gerald Smiley is just an incredible person. Pitched in the minor leagues in the Rangers organization. He really has a passion to help out these kids. And he is spearheading a drive to help bolster the baseball program at Rainier Beach High School. And if you would like to help, I'm going to tell you about this website where you can go to help donate. It's www.gofundme.com/Rainier Beach Baseball. If you can help out head coach Gerald Smiley, the kids at Rainier Beach High School, it would be greatly, greatly appreciated. So go to that website, gofundme.com/Rainier Beach Baseball, and help out these kids and help Coach Smiley, because he's an incredible coach, and he's going to really help these kids. So, Hot Stove Baseball winding down. First show of the year. Shannon, I can't believe it. Aaron, how quickly the show has gone, how quickly the holidays have come and gone, and now it's time for spring training. It's time to get down there in the sun in Peoria, Arizona, and get ready for another season.
Yeah, we've still got a couple of weeks before we see it, but it's just so exciting in that you follow it all off season, you see it on paper, you have in your mind what it can be, and then you have that first opportunity to see it out on the field. And we're going to see something very different. There'll be a lot of familiar faces. There'll be a lot of new faces as well. But we're going to see some serious competition for spots. We've talked about the fifth starter spot. Yeah. There will be some bullpen competition as well, and bench competition too. There are a number of players that have been picked up that, you know, for that last spot on the roster. They all bring different things and good things to the table, and that'll be a battle as well. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And then we're going to see some young players. We are going to see some development at the big league level, but it's going to have what Jerry DePoto calls nets. You know, if this doesn't work out, we can do this, or if they need more time, we can do that. There's going to be competition between those young players for the spots. Just a very different look spring training, I think, this year.
Exactly. At first base, Aaron, you have Dan Vogelbach, and to help out, you have Danny Valencia. In right field, you have Mitch Haniger, who Jerry said was a key part of that trade with the Diamondbacks for Taijuan Walker, besides getting Gene Segura. So, yeah, the youth is out there. They're going to get a chance to play, and it's going to be fun to watch these kids along with the veterans.
And I think one face that we're all going to be excited to see on a more regular basis when you take a look at this season in spring training, Scott Brosius, now a full-time member of the Mariners coaching staff. Yeah. Of course, last year, his first year with the Mariners system, the Rainiers hitting coach, and Scott received this grand publicity because of Mike Zunino, and Mike very publicly thanking Scott for his work with Scott or with all of our conversations with Scott. Just an incredible guy, a wonderful human being to be around. So for his baseball acumen and also for just being a good guy, we're going to appreciate having Scott Brosius around.
I think we can finally forgive the Yankees aspect.
Yeah, we can forgive. No problem at all.
It's nice to have him in a Mariners
uniform. A teacher,
too,
which is great. He's definitely a teacher.
Alongside Edgar Martinez. And when Edgar took over as hitting coach last year, the club was hitting about .238. And from the time he took over, the club hit around .270. Before he took over, the club was averaging 3.3 runs a game, and they averaged 4.5 runs a game since he took over. So it's all about, you know, thinking about, okay, what do I have to do from the time you leave the on-deck circle to the time you get into that batter's box? And nobody did it better than Edgar Martinez
and especially in Game 5 of the American League Division Series, when in the ninth inning, Jack McDowell struck him out on a forkball. In the 11th inning, with Joey on at third base and Junior on at first base, he was waiting for the forkball. He got it, hit the double, the biggest hit in our history. So it's going to be fun watching those two guys work together. And have Casey Kandel at first base.
We're going to have to check in with him pretty soon, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to have to check in. I'm sure he's having a very interesting offseason.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't say enough about the coaching staff last year. And to see them all come back and to add Scott Brosius, just absolutely fantastic. That was a great group.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a heck of a year. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Everybody is optimistic, obviously, heading into spring training. But it's going to be fun because I think what they did so well before they walked on the field, Aaron, last year, where they had those get-togethers and get to know one another at 9 o'clock in the morning in the clubhouse.
And think that'll continue this year? Is that going to happen
again?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to happen. It's good.
You're going to be a world reporter? You're going to give us the Italy report, Rico? You're going to hop in there every once in a while? Let us know what's going on in the homeland?
I don't think they'll let me in the clubhouse at that point, but if they want anybody, you know, from Cosenza, Italy, my grandparents were from there, I'll tell them what's going on and talk about how to make a good lasagna.
Maybe you can be the pool shark. Oh, wait, that's Edgar.
Yeah. Yeah, and Tony Zick, he was pretty good. That's a guy.
Edgar won the tournament, I think.
Edgar's good at everything. Unbelievable. We got to wrap things up. The second hour is gone. It flew by. We had Jerry DePoto in the first hour. We had Larry Stone in the second talking about the Hall of Fame and a lot to talk about as we get ready for spring training. Channing, thank you so much for being here tonight. Aaron Goldsmith, producer-engineer Kevin Kremen, and the one and only Matty Harden over there. I'm Rick Riz. We will see you next Tuesday. The caravan is going out. We're going to have a lot of fun. So long, everybody.